I felt I was Michigan. I just felt I was so much a part of it that nothing would ever change that.
Welcome to the MGO podcast live at the Bow Store on Main Street. We have a substitution.
Is this where I awkwardly say hi?
Oh, God. You jumped the gun.
Oh.
Can I get one person in my employ to say hi when I want them to?
I'm trying to do Ace justice.
Ugh. All right. This podcast is canceled. All right. It's not canceled.
I'm going to go watch basketball.
It's not canceled. We are going to have to cut it a little bit short today because we do have to get home and watch the basketball game. We will be talking to Ace, who is recuperating at home with Theraflu and pink elephants and whatnot. He didn't want to communicate his disease to the rest of the blog, and we appreciate that forbearance. But we will be calling him up to talk about last night's basketball game and maybe a little bit about this upcoming game. But since I assume that almost everybody who listens to this podcast is listening to it on Saturday, not so much.
He'll be better by tomorrow, we hope. Yes.
Indeed.
Anyway.
So
rockin' start I got here.
It's okay, dude. Just learn from
it. Hi, Mom. I'm on the radio.
Okay, Seth. I was about to compare your start here to Michigan's against Iowa, but they scored 10-0 to go up, so that's not what's going on here. But anyway, one last look back at the Iowa game. Unfortunately, we must do this. I've done my in-depth film review of the game in upon further review, and man, was that weird.
Yeah, it was about as weird as a very quiet drive home from Iowa.
Well, the thing is, so Spate starts off very well. He has that awesome roll-out pass that almost gets caught by J.H. Chesson for the first down. You know, on his first 11 throws, I had one that was kind of in the I-don't-grade-it bin, and then 9 of those other 10 throws I thought were good. So he kind of picked up where he left off his last 3 weeks. And then those first 11 throws, I had him at 40% for the rest of the way.
And then, yeah, that was...
This is bad.
That was bad. It didn't seem like there was anything that precipitated that moment. It just kind of...
No, it just sort of happened. And I was like, I wish this wasn't happening.
Yes. Well, things that happen don't generally follow what occurred before, Brian.
I mean... It's possible that the shoulder thing that Spate apparently has is something that's been chronic, and for whatever reason, it got worse. He took a hit, or I don't know what.
Yeah, I watched the tape again because you know we have a point where he was good and then he wasn't, and then he actually made some okay throws after that. But I didn't see anything. I don't think he took a hit until after the de-spatening.
So I mean, just. One of those things, and I am a person who says things about what happened in the past and projects them into the future, so I was very upset about this for multiple reasons. One, of course, is Michigan ends up losing this game, and for two, it's like, I mean, what am I supposed to do? Like, the guy has 3 1/3 games where he's totally awesome, and then he just falls off a cliff. So, yeah, I'm at a loss to explain any of that.
Cold? Yeah, at this point, it's grasping for straws, but either way, I think he's not going to be in for this game. So,
we detected some mental issues, we'll say, on the offensive line, mostly the two guards. Bredesen, of course, is a true freshman. Kalos is not. And, you know, I can never be entirely sure because I don't know what the play call is. But, you know, from the framework of a play and what everybody else is doing, I usually get a pretty decent look at what the assignments are. I think the safety's on Kalos, and there was a couple of pitch sweeps, one where he didn't pick up a blitz, and one where Bredesen just seemed to not understand what he was doing. So this is probably too technical for a purely audio radio thing.
It's a visual podcast.
It's a very visual podcast.
We were talking earlier in the season about how Mason Cole at center kind of makes the calls, and we were giving him credit for maybe things that were going on around him for the good play of Bredesen and whatever. So maybe this was a night that they couldn't hear him, or maybe he wasn't seeing everything that they were showing him. I don't know.
Well, the Kalis issues were, I think, just on Kalis. The Bredesen thing, it could have been Cole, but back to what I was saying, when you're doing those pitch sweeps like Michigan has, those are called pin and pulls, and the pin part is that there's someone lined up inside of you to your inside shoulder, you block down on them. And if there isn't, then you pull around. And on the ill-fated 3rd-and-1 that turned into 4th-and-6 and then the 51-yard field goal, Bredesen has a guy shaded inside of him, and he pulls. And that guy proceeds to go blow up the play, and it's a little bit perplexing because, I know he is a true freshman, but that is one of the simplest blocking.
That's not a thing where he has the wrong play call either. That's just you see a guy lined up over you and...
But then I think that might go back to Cole because you see Cole try to block down on that guy. And if the call was right from Cole, then he should be pulling as well and being like, what are you doing? So I'm a little bit at a loss to explain that. And then, of course, the other major issue with the offense was the fact that the wide receivers didn't help out their quarterback very much.
Yeah. They had a couple hard balls that were catchable, but Spate could have put in better position for them. And, this is a game where I think one of those catches is made, any one of them, and it could change the entire outcome.
Well, especially the one that ended up intercepted, which if Chesson brings that in, Michigan has a first down at like the Iowa 20. They're able to run more clock, and you're looking at a chip shot field goal probably at worst, and then is Iowa going to score a touchdown having to throw the ball downfield starting from their 20 or 25? No.
No.
So... this is one of those games where, you're looking at, the statistical business and it's like, oh, this is a 97% chance to win, which means that so many different things have to go wrong, and they pretty much all did.
Right. All you had to do was get Iowa in a position where they have to pass, and then Michigan pinned their ears back. They didn't have much of a passing game. When they did pass, I think they only had one receiver going out there. So,
that was an oddity. So. So, part of it made sense to me because whenever they actually put a bunch of receivers in the route, Michigan just got after Beathard and attacked him and mostly sacked him or hit him. And he got so much pressure. He got 50% of the time he dropped back, he got pressured. But with so many of those plays, max protection, the actual we're trying to pass the ball events is probably 75%, maybe 80%, where he just didn't have time to throw.
Well, Iowa's best passing play all game was actually the throw, I think it was on the first drive, where they threw it downfield, and Michigan safety is just Delano Hill is just way off, and their receiver, he puts a little high, and the receiver can't bring it in. But that looked really scary. And Michigan actually was defending the pass all the way till the very end of the game, frustratingly to the end of the game, when Iowa was not going to be passing at all, and they could just be bringing some people down. And I go back to that pass early in the game when you just thought, wow, I hope that doesn't happen to us again. It really didn't.
No, by my count, they had 3 open receivers. They hit a slant on Stribling early. They had the drop on the first play, and then there was a play-action pass, which I think the linebackers bit up on, and they were open for about 15 yards, and they dropped that one too. Everything else was covered. They had a couple of completions. There was America's rollout out on the on their touchdown drive where, it's 2nd and goal from the 8, and Jordan Lewis comes and just nails this guy. But he manages to bring it in, and that was particularly frustrating because we saw a Michigan receiver unable to do the same thing all night. And, again, that is a situation where one of those catches probably flips that game.
Yeah, in the end, though, Michigan was number 3 going into that game. They're number 3 coming out of that game.
No solace.
That's
no solace.
Everything is still on the table.
Some other defensive things that I picked up on. Chris Wormley had a monster game. He was +17 with no minuses. He crushed tight ends. He got pressure. you know, he's a guy who actually hasn't been involved a lot in the past 3-4 weeks because teams have been avoiding him so much. Iowa did not, and they paid the cost.
Well, I'm kind of glad because it's been business as usual for him for so long now, and he's such a great player. We're seeing the end of his career at Michigan, and now I get to – I was glad at least we got one game, even though the rest of the game we can't enjoy, to kind of sit back and go, man, this guy.
On the other hand, a couple of uncharacteristically poor performances. Ryan Glasgow got blown out a couple times. There was one particular run where I thought that he had it dead to rights, and then he kind of inexplicably stopped. So he managed to scrape just above zero in my grading, but that's not actually a good score for a defensive lineman. And then also Taco Charlton, he had some great plays. He was the primary force for the interception that almost sealed the game. But he also, I think, missed a couple of assignments. There was one particular run when they went to that three-man line package where Iowa went right up the middle. And that was interesting to me because they had Jabril Peppers as sort of a super deep middle linebacker. And it looked like the goal of that was that no matter where the ball went, Jabril Peppers was going to be the force player. So basically that means if the ball bounces outside, it's Peppers' responsibility. And Taco went outside on that play, and I was like, that's probably not ideal.
Yeah, I was kind of was confused by a lot of the 3-3-5 stuff today for that game. It wasn't really the team to be using it against. And
well, I mean, it can't work as long as you get the blitzes right, and it just kind of seems like Michigan doesn't have that down yet. Which
yeah,
is,
I mean, it's not their bag. This is a team that's really against a team like Iowa. They can just beat them up front. Well, should be able to.
Yeah, and then you know, we saw a continuation of the edge issues that we've seen over the past few weeks. And those kind of combined with something that we had seen in the Michigan State game where the linebackers covering running backs out of the backfield became a problem. So Mike McCray got beat by Akram Wadley on a 27, 28-yard play. That was the longest of Iowa had from scrimmage. And the thing that like kind of grated me a little bit on that is that Don Brown saw that limitation, saw the fact that Akram Wadley already had 23 catches on the year. And so he decided that whenever Wadley was going to leak out of the backfield, that one of his defensive linemen was going to hit him. And Wormley did hit him, and McCray still got beat. And that's kind of the, don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, if Michigan wins this game 34-13, then who cares? It's a 28-yard play, and this is just kind of who McCray is this year at this point. I think that he was kind of fixing some of his issues, but Akram Wadley is that's an issue. He's not going to be able to cover a guy like that.
And it was interesting because on the ensuing Gold Go drive, they had a pass where Ryan Glasgow just pretty much wrapped him up. He's like, no, you can't go in a route, which is technically illegal, but I've never seen it called. And that resulted in Beathard just kind of booting the ball out of bounds. And on the next play, Wadley just runs by Maurice Hurst. And
yeah.
I was like, given what I've seen on these previous plays, I think that, you know, the touchdown looks like it's on Mike McCray. And it's partially on Mike McCray. But I think that the bigger mistake was the defensive lineman letting Akram Wadley go without a hit. Because he had a guy outside of him that was totally unblocked in Chris Wormley. So if he does take out Wadley, the quarterback has to scramble, likely gets sacked, and Michigan gets out of that without giving up a touchdown. And therefore wins the game. Because they're basically one more thing goes well and Michigan wins this game, but
yeah,
that did
and
not
that's
happen.
So one more thing. I mean, yeah. Can we stop talking?
Yeah, go
about
ahead.
Iowa now?
Just grab those. Our main sponsor just eating in front of us. It's a bad week. We've had a bad week. And then, yeah. You know, the one thing that at the end of the game that was just kind of like, oh man. Was they open up their final drive of the game. They're on the 36. They have a screen to Akram Wadley. And Akram Wadley is literally 75% of their offense. He has 75% of their yards. And Michigan apparently forgets to cover him. So you see a tight end kind of run a slant route, and Jabril Peppers bugs out for a deep zone or something, and you know, Gedeon is covering the tight end. So I thought it was Peppers. It could have been Gedeon. I, you know, again, this is just me guessing. And the really unfortunate part of that is that Iowa was really late getting out. Iowa, their center just got hung up. And so if Peppers is on that, it's probably a tackle for loss. And then you're looking at an Iowa team that hasn't been able to throw the ball all night in second and 12 out of field goal range. And you're looking at a pretty decent chance that Michigan wins that game. So
one more thing.
Yep. Just kind of an overall malaise, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, if Michigan had scored 28 points in this game, how much of these issues, things that we're focusing on, how much are like, oh, Peppers had a bad play?
Well, Peppers had a couple. He was the guy who most ostentatiously missed a tackle on Akram Wadley.
Oh yeah, that one.
He had a bit of a rough game. I thought McCray had a rough game. I liked Gedeon, but Pro Football Focus hated Gedeon. It might be that we're assigning a blame on that screen differently, which might be correct. Who knows? Nobody knows. But you know, overall, I watch this game and I see a lot of uncharacteristic performances. And the thing about uncharacteristic performances is they do not persist. That's what makes them uncharacteristic. So,
well, I was standing next to you at the game and
got to hear me swear a lot.
Yes, I think that was about 75% of the swear words I've ever heard you utter were probably in the last 5 minutes of that game.
Well, we're you know, I have a son and I'm already prepped for like no, those are daddy's sports words.
I have replacement words, and I don't think I should utter them on this podcast either.
You have replacement words?
Yes.
Like, they're not swears.
They're not swears.
But you can't say them on the podcast.
Well, some of them are, professionals and people that I don't respect.
Wow. Am I one of them?
No.
But tell the truth.
No, I swear to God.
You swear to God.
You are not one of them.
All right.
You are not one of them. There is nobody at this table or in this room
is a recently deceased Free Press writer. Don't answer that. It is. I can tell that it is. Wow.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
That's So I heard you yelling some crazy names there.
You had a point that I distracted you from.
Yeah. Well, you were. I think you were blaming Brown about a couple things at that point. Is that after watching the tape? Was that a
Brown?
No, Don,
who's
Don,
Brown?
Don Brown.
Oh, Don Brown. So I
the
did,
Don.
I did think that the last Michigan defensive snap where that's the quarterback sneak. I didn't understand that because it's like third and eight, and it's like a 35-yard field goal, or it's like a 40-yard field goal right there. So like. Yeah. Every yard you're giving up is a very important yard. Cause,
and
like,
Kirk Ferentz isn't going to be passing for a touchdown to win, right? Yeah.
Like, you've given up 66 passing yards. You know, in that situation, if they have the balls to go shotgun and spread them out, then the only reaction is to go zero coverage, and if they complete a touchdown on you, best of luck, dudes. So that frustrated me because I thought that – especially because, first of all, they get the spot wrong.
Yeah.
So if they get that spot right, it's fourth down. Michigan can take its timeout, and then they have 30 seconds with which to mount a field goal drive of their own to win. But that didn't happen. But I still thought that the only response to that was to load up and just blitz and just put as many people in the backfield and try to make that a 45-yard field goal instead of a 33-yard field goal.
Yeah, and I mean, this was kind of what we were excited about for Don Brown, that you get into a high-pressure situation and he'll have something to dial up.
Well, he did send a fifth guy, but it was – I mean, the focus I thought was wrong. It was an all-out pass rush, so, like, they split. And I was just like, you know, you kind of got to see that coming with Kirk Ferentz, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe Don Brown hasn't coached against Kirk Ferentz. He doesn't know, like, the Tao of the man. And he doesn't quite understand that Kirk Ferentz is always going to run in that situation. But
this is a man who's been, you know, Jimbo Fisher is probably the
I mean, any
what he's gone against.
Any critique of Don Brown is a nitpick and a pedantic one at that. So I don't really.
These
have,
are all nitpicks. One thing.
But it's one thing if you're, you know, if you win this game 21-13, am I still looking at this game and thinking, well, that's something that Ohio State might be able to exploit? So yes. I mean, Michigan's been playing Ohio State for essentially since the Penn State game ended. And they've done pretty well in my mental Ohio State checkbook. And there are some issues in this game that I think degrade my opinion of their chances against Ohio State, just on defense.
That linebacker running back matchup is really
some of that stuff is something that stuff we would definitely be talking about, even if Michigan does hit a couple deep balls and win this game. All right, let's never talk about that again.
Agreed.
ever. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to have Inside the Crooked Blue Line with Steve Lorenz.
In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
What would make your next visit to a Michigan game even better? How about getting together with your family and friends for a great tailgate with no effort? It's so easy thanks to Tailgater Concierge. Just go to tailgaterconcierge.com and choose one of their most popular packages or create a customer order to fit your specific needs. They will take care of the rest by setting up your tailgate right across from the stadium on Main Street and cleaning up afterwards to ensure you are on time for kickoff. Tailgater Concierge, an easier way to tailgate.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are, and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGO blog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Oh, that label man said, son, now can you sing a little bit more clear? Said your voice might be too country next to what they've been here. Can you sing a little more about outlaws and the way things used to be?
Oh, you guys got the wrong part of that song. Oh, I didn't see a timing on it.
Come on. It's life ain't fair and the world is mean. So that's why.
I thought we were never talking about that again.
Well, I lied and I'm a hypocrite. Speaking of liars and hypocrites, how you doing, Steve Lorenz?
Good, Ryan. Good Ace.
Just blowing past that one.
Welcome
to Inside the Crooked Blue Line with Steve Lorenz. We talk Michigan recruiting with Steve Lorenz of 24/7. Big official visit weekend coming up. Most prominently is Isaiah Wilson, And with the recent commitment of Jedrick Wills to Alabama, is Michigan's main competition out of this, or are they still pursuing Wilson?
I think Alabama's still involved to an extent. But this is one I think Michigan has felt pretty good about for a while. I know, I'd say, you know, because I put in a crystal ball for Jordan Anthony, a linebacker, I think a couple weeks ago or last week. I think Wilson's probably the big target that I'm probably closest to moving forward with there. I think some of our users, I kind of wonder why I haven't put one in yet for Michigan, but I still think it's probably Michigan or Alabama, but I would have to give Michigan the edge, especially heading into a big weekend. I mean, he's tweeting about Bo Schembechler and stuff, like heading into his visit this week. I mean, it's obvious he knows and has done his homework on Michigan and what matters and stuff. So, you know, really sort of a status quo there. I mean, Alabama's still sniffing around, though.
Another guy who is actually a commit elsewhere coming in this weekend is Rutger Reitmeier. Please pay no attention to the first name if you are trying to make it an evaluation of how quality of a prospect this is. He's committed to Oregon, and my policy is anyone Brady Hoke wants on the defensive line, I will take as well. Kind of an interesting situation, though, because Michigan is also in on Aubrey Solomon and who's the other guy?
Tufele,
yeah, Jay Tufele. So is he a take right now? Would Michigan just grab him, or are they going to hold out for some bigger fish? And, you know, how highly regarded is he by the Michigan staff?
I do think he's a take because I think one of the things with Reitmeier, I think he's another guy that isn't necessarily destined to play right in the middle. He's a guy that can move around a little bit if they wanted to. Sort of like maybe what Darren Irving Bay would be. You know, I think Solomon and Tufele are guys they'd love to stick in the middle. I know Solomon's probably got a little versatility, but I definitely think Reitmeier's a take, and Michigan definitely likes him. It was kind of interesting. I don't know if we've talked about him before, but, you know, Michigan, Oregon were the two offers he wanted before he committed to Oregon. And, you know, he finally got the Michigan offer. Now Oregon's kind of tanking big time. I think the job uncertainty there is got to be playing a factor. And I know our national guy, Steve Wolfong, just talked to his dad, I think a few days ago, and dad met with the Michigan coaches like on his own, which is unique. You don't really hear that very often. And really, really liked what the staff had to say and the attention they've been paying to him since they offered. So I think there's some legitimate chance there. I think optimism's growing. I think he's a kid. He's done a few interviews talking. He's still 100% to Oregon. I think he's one of those guys that doesn't really want to come off as a kid that's, you know, not really just being decisive about this. So that's kind of the impression I've gotten, you know, but he's definitely interested in Michigan. And, you know, this visit, you know, given it'll be his only time up, will probably make or break their chances. But again, I mean, Oregon's defense has been terrible. I think Helfrich is on his seat is white hot right now. I just, you know, there's a lot more stability at Michigan. And yeah, I mean, they can coach the defensive line up really well. So,
Torrey Carter is a fullback out of Georgia, actually a teammate of 2018 commit Otis Reese. Does Michigan have room for a pure fullback in this class? Is Ben Mason destined for that? Would he like decommit from Michigan if Michigan's like, we want you as a fullback? How open is he to that? And is this just kind of tweaking Les Miles for some reason? Because he's an LSU commit.
I don't think it's tweaking. I think he's a kid they've kind of sniffed around with for a while. You know, with Mason, you know, I know when he first committed, it was linebacker, you know, and I don't necessarily think he was too thrilled about the possibility of being maybe primarily a fullback. I think with some of these guys, they'll play fullback, but they want to play linebacker too. I know when Chase Lassiter, the former Verbal, was a part of the class, like that was kind of his thing too. Like he didn't want to be just labeled a fullback. He wanted to play linebacker at Michigan too. So I think maybe Michigan may have to answer, like maybe give some finality to that question this weekend because Mason will be on campus too. Carter, yeah, more of a pure fullback. And yeah, Michigan really hasn't recruited like a pure fullback under Harbaugh yet. He definitely fits the bill. I think Michigan is probably got a pretty decent shot here. I think with the LSU kids, though, kids that are committed there, it really might depend on what they do with their coaching situation. I know that with Austin Deculus, their offensive tackle that Michigan's still recruiting. I mean, it sounds like it's going to come down to, you know, what do they do at coach? And with Carter, it kind of sounds like it's going to be the same thing, despite Michigan's good standing with Reese, who I think is rock solid, and then with them looking a little bit better with Aubrey Solomon than they did before. So, but again, you know, Jim Harbaugh loves fullback. You'd be remiss to think that they might not make a hard push for a guy that's a pure fullback.
Well, you posted an interesting note on Deculus saying that he might look around if he didn't like the new LSU offense. And since this is a guy who committed to the most pro-style offense in existence, would that be an advantage for Michigan if they bring in a Tom Herman?
That's kind of what I want, you know, but Herman is – the guy is going to produce offensive linemen. I feel like it does, though. It has to be. I mean, because obviously he's keeping his eye out, you know, for some reason. And if Michigan's the school like that I believe in, that we've been told is the school with the best chance to maybe get him to reopen things fully, then it's obvious he wants to play in a power style, you know, maybe run heavy type offense. So yeah, you look at who LSU's looking at out there. I don't know if Coach O is, you know, a guy that maybe these kids are going to stick with or not, but you know, with Herman, it's hard to say. I mean, I think he's just kind of a wild card with some of these guys. But given what Deculus has kind of laid out there, you know, I don't know. I feel like Michigan would have some sort of advantage there, maybe. But again, by the time LSU makes a hire, though, who knows how many verbals Michigan will have on the offensive line anyway. So, you know, it is. LSU is kind of a school to watch because they're still kind of sniffing around with a few of those guys.
And one final interesting official visitor is Notre Dame cornerback commitment Elijah Hicks. And when you posted that he would be in town this weekend, you said that you'd been sitting on it until Monday because the kid didn't want it out. And then the Notre Dame side of things are swearing up and down that this is just a vacation to see Michigan play Indiana in sleet, which is doesn't really sniff right.
I don't buy. I'm like in the middle. You know, I know where the 100% of Notre Dame stuff is coming from. I think it's his high school head coach, who's a great guy, actually. But yeah, I mean, to come out here in November, yeah, like you said, to watch Michigan play Indiana, it's got to at least leave the door open. I mean, even look at a kid like Matt Hankins, the Iowa commit they offered. I mean, he never even came out, you know. So to make that trip, Michigan offered him not too shortly before he did verbal to Notre Dame. And I think there was an anticipation that they'd eventually get him on campus. That was before he verbaled. I think they kind of had to keep chipping away to get him up there. But you look at what Michigan's got left on their cornerback board, you know, with Ambry Thomas and Darnay Holmes. And I think probably Brandon Sebastian, the Cheshire Academy three-star that's committed to Boston College. I think he's kind of a push hard late kind of kid. But I think Hicks is a guy I feel like if he wanted in, that Michigan would take him just for the simple fact that I think Holmes is far from a certainty. I know they feel pretty good about Ambry Thomas still, you know, but they want to get a couple more of those guys. So, you know, I'm always a guy, if a kid's visiting, there's definitely interest there. I don't care what anybody says. So it's just a matter of maybe how much, you know, he may have low interest, but you get him up there for a weekend with his mom. I think Kakoa Crawford will be his host, too, and there's some familiarity there, being the Southern California connection. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But yeah, I mean, I've never really fully bought into the it's a vacation thing. I mean, it's not the vacation I'd be taking. I'd be going to, like, Miami or Texas or somewhere, like, you know, cooler than – not cooler, but
– warmer.
I guess the opposite. Yeah, really, yeah. You know what I mean? So, One to kind of keep an eye on. Not the expectations aren't super high, but they're higher than zero for sure.
I have to talk to you about Najee Harris because I know what's good for my bottom line. So he had to cancel a planned official for this weekend. He has rescheduled it for the December 10th weekend that will have Donovan Peoples-Jones, Ambry Thomas, a bunch of commits. It's Michigan's like biggest postseason but pre-January recruiting weekend. And that's going to be his last visit. That kind of seems like a blessing in disguise there.
Yes. Really, things pretty like status quo as far as that there's real optimism on Michigan's side. You know, we'll have to see where it goes. But I put it this way. I haven't posted this on the – give you guys a little bit of a tiny scoop out here.
Ooh.
There's a – There's a 2018 running back target. I won't name him. There's a kid in 18 that they're trying to recruit who is leery of his interest in Michigan because he believes they're going to sign Najee Harris. Ooh. So I don't know if that means that he's just maybe been reading some articles or what, but I thought it was really interesting that a kid verbally committed to Alabama is hurting Michigan with some of their running back targets. I just thought it was kind of an interesting little tidbit. So if that tells you that Michigan is very, very much in the thick of this, then that I don't really know what would. So Michigan or Bama, he may try to visit Ohio State or USC. I don't see those two schools as factors anymore. And Michigan, like I said, has been putting the full court press on him for a while. So
the other major Alabama-Michigan battle is for Alex Leatherwood. And he's had a really kind of weird presence in articles and on social media. So on social media, he's like Jedrick Wills commits and he's like, crazy thing is we aren't even close to being done. Yeah, go tight. And then he tells some Florida reporter that he's iffy on his commitment. And I'm just like, I mean, which one is the real status there? I feel like he's probably less in play than we've heard in the past, but I don't know. You're the expert.
The status quo with Leatherwood has been that if Mario Cristobal stays with Alabama, then he's going to sign with Alabama. Now, as a kid who's going to finalize his commitment in December, it's kind of a weird like criteria to have, just because if Cristobal leaves, it would not be in December, you know, provided Alabama gets to the playoff as we expect them to. Michigan has felt like they were in it, but I've always kind of felt like he was going to sign with Alabama. Like, not a kid that I thought I'd ever maybe flip a crystal ball on or anything like that. That's kind of the gist of it. I mean, he, I do agree though. His approach has been very weird. Kind of feel like he's maybe just trying to have some fun with the process. That's kind of the vibe I get from it. But I know that there's still contact there on both sides with him and Michigan. So, you know, it's not as if he's fully shutting it down with other schools. So, you know, we'll just have to see. You know, Michigan can say, like, you know, you have a legit chance to start next year. I don't know if Alabama, I know they lose a couple. I think they lose Cam Robinson. I don't know who else they lose. But, you know, they might not have that same, you know, pitch. So, you know, I don't know. I still, again, I've kind of always thought he was going to sign with Alabama. I would say this, though, the timing of the Jedrick Wills commitment was kind of a surprise. I didn't really, you know, he'd gone back and forth about four or five times about when he was going to commit. And then he commits in a video where he tries on the suit for all his finalists, but he did not try a Michigan suit on, which was interesting to me. And I think it was absolutely on purpose because Michigan, there's no doubt in my mind that Michigan finished second in that race. So I thought it was very interesting that he did not put on the Michigan suit. I wonder if there was some Saban influence in that. So,
I wonder if so he was reputedly a silent commit to Bama since July. He might have just done it back then before Michigan actually got interested.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. Because the thing about the silent commitment, that we're pretty sure that he fully backed off of that after his Michigan official. So unless they had that video like in the queue, which I guess I wouldn't rule it out. Usually they don't, they're relatively like not too long before their commitment with most of these guys. I don't know. Sometimes it varies. I know a couple of them were done at the opening when all these like elite recruits were together, but I don't think that one was for sure. But the thing with his silent commitment, I even know our Alabama people for the last few weeks have been reporting they thought Michigan or that Alabama was in a better shape potentially with Isaiah Wilson because of the whole Wills not wanting to play guard, you know, thing. And then he kind of commits out of nowhere. I don't think he had publicly set this date or anything. So I just thought I didn't think it was a coincidence that Michigan was not included in that video. I think there's a little bit to it. Those little things, they can do those little things sometimes.
Tariq Black took an official to Alabama. I've checked in with the Alabama board and they don't think he's a take, but he's also setting up a suite of visits that he's going to take all five. This is a guy who seemed like locked and loaded for Michigan a couple months ago. Do you think that situation is changing? Do you think that Tariq Black might end up somewhere else?
I don't think it's going to depend on what Michigan, because with Brad Hawkins kind of being considered a member of the class again, I don't really see them taking five. you figured Michigan's in really good shape with Peoples-Jones and then Nico Collins and Oliver Martin as well. It's just kind of where's the cutoff there. You know, I know Hawkins is a guy that could be kind of considered an ath. I know they actually kind of preferred him on defense last cycle. I don't necessarily know that that's changed or not. If as long as the status quo remains as far as whether or not they would take Black, then I would expect him to end up in Michigan. But, again, this stuff changes, like, so quickly. And with the whole Hawkins thing now, I think it's potentially it could change. I just can't say for certain right now.
Willie Gay is a guy who's been getting some crystal ball predictions to Michigan. He's publicly announced that Michigan is his leader after his decommitment from Ole Miss. And your colleague Steve Wiltfong put in a crystal ball for him to Mississippi State. It seems like those are the two options that he has, and it's not often that Michigan is in a recruiting battle with Mississippi State. How does that recruitment play out in your mind?
I think it comes down to familiarity versus maybe where he – because I have no doubt that he favors Michigan at this point. I think that – we talked earlier about him. We talked about him a few times with his academic situation needed to get smoothed over. It sounds like that's a decent possibility now, or that Michigan thinks he can work through it. What they're trying to get him back up for another visit before signing day. If they can get him back up again, I think Michigan's chances go way, way up. I think mom will be up there with him if he does go. I think she was up there last time. I can't remember for certain, but I think it's maybe family stuff that needs more convincing. You know, Starkville, Mississippi, that's where he's from, so he's in his backyard if he stayed home and played for Mississippi State. So I think it really comes down to whether or not they can get him back up or not. If they do, probably feel really good about Michigan's chances, but it's not a certainty that he's going to come back up. He's saying he's going to try, but, you know, that stuff doesn't always work out. So kind of an interesting situation. Again, not a race I think Michigan even thought they'd be in a month ago. Now they're right in the thick of it. He's an elite player. He's a guy that could probably step right in and play linebacker for him next year if they needed him. So, you know, kind of an interesting – and, yeah, Mississippi, you know, as we said, is such a black hole for Michigan recruiting-wise. I want to say, like, Jeremy Lesueur is the only Mississippi native.
That is correct.
That's only played for Michigan. Right, yeah, so they've only literally had one guy from the state of Mississippi on their team. So, you know, so it'd be quite an interesting win if they could pull that one off. So – because you look at Mississippi State, I don't even know what their record is this year, but it's probably not very good. Like, that hometown pull's really got to be the only thing that's, you know, keeping them in it, because I feel like he favors Michigan. He loves Jabril Peppers. I mean, he told me that the day Michigan offered, which was, like, I think back in, like, May of last year or so, that Jabril Peppers was his favorite college football player, and he hasn't wavered from that. So, you know, there was some interest there right away, but, again, if he comes back up, I think – maybe you see more crystal balls in for Michigan.
Do you think he's a guy that you guys might have underrated right at the moment? I think he's like just inside the top 100. You know, Wiltfong compared his athleticism to Baron Browning and Dylan Moses as like the top three guys in the class. And, you know, Michigan seems to think that he's an instant impact guy. Is he maybe more of a top 50 guy than a top 100 guy?
I would say this. I think he's one of about seven or eight guys that our evaluators are really looking to see at the Army game, because I think there is a belief that there's some five-star potential there with him. Now, he was great at the opening from what I remember. And, but yeah, I mean, I'd say this, like when Michigan was not really much in that, was not really in that race. I think he committed to Ole Miss and he was kind of an afterthought at the time. Like he was a guy that was always like at or near the top of their linebacker board, along with Browning, probably Drew Singleton, you know. So it's a guy they've always held in high regard, but a guy I don't think maybe for the most of the duration of his recruitment they really thought they were like fully in. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a top 100 guy at least, with the potential for more, just because his athleticism is like, it's great, but it's good athleticism like on film too. He's not just like an athlete. Like, he's an athlete that knows how to play the game. So, yeah, I agree. We'll be watching him at the Army game. I won't be. I don't do rankings, but our evaluators will be for sure.
Do they have any opinions on Quiddy Paye, who made the Under Armour game, I believe, through a fan vote? I mean, he's from Rhode Island. He doesn't play anybody. He's just kind of a generic three-star right now, but that'll be an opportunity for him to show his stuff and possibly move up.
Big time. I mean, it's a huge showcase for any of those, like, small state. Well, like A.J. Dillon, you know, was from Massachusetts. We bumped him up to the top 100 after what he did at the opening because of, you know, his athleticism, which, again, you saw the raw number. We knew the raw numbers heading in, but then you see it against some, like, legit competition. He was really impressive. I know one thing, Barton Simmons, our national guy, doesn't care where a guy's from or whatever. They evaluate guys, I feel like, pretty fairly. So not afraid to bump. Well, St. Juice, too. I mean, St. Juice is in our top 100. So, you know, these are guys that, once they get that opportunity in front of elite competition, they'll get a more than fair shake. And Quiddy's definitely a guy that fits that bill. I mean, he's kind of got pretty similar measurables and athletic I don't even know the word I'm thinking of, but to like Luigi Villain. So you put him up against some guys, you know, some good offensive tackles and stuff, see what he does, and then they'll go from there. But he's a high ceiling guy too. I think Quiddy kind of reminds me of Josh Uche from last year a little bit.
Finally, I did some research, and I just want to tell you this. You guys have 8 guys with hyphenated last names in your top 300 in the composite. Michigan has commits from 2 of them, leads for 2 more, and they recruited 3 more of them. So there's only one guy. He's like a Georgia Tech commit who's Pat Swilling's kid, who Michigan didn't go after at a hyphenated last name. So could you make that a state? Like, guys with hyphenated last names could, like, go below Michigan or something. We could just click on it and see Michigan's dominance of this very important demographic.
In the hyphenated name category?
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is they probably could whip
yes.
like that up pretty quickly if I really wanted
to. Do it!
Like, we could have a list of the top hyphenated names in the country. It is funny, though. I don't know how, that, you know, it's just random how it comes about, but it is I don't know. Maybe they offer a guy.
Well, four of them are in state, so that's kind
of right. No, I know that definitely helps,
but like
no, I think they I don't think they're done with the hyphenated name situation in this cycle for sure.
Their top quarterback to target in 2018 is a hyphenated last name too.
Yes.
So it's a thing. It's a thing.
And they all end up with and we all just end up calling them by the 3 initials.
Yeah, the 3 too, initials.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like yeah. So. No, I'll talk to headquarters, and we'll see if we can get a hyphenated name list.
Yes.
There and Michigan, you know, I think Ohio State, Alabama, probably going to be fighting for the number 1 overall spot in the country. Michigan might be able to win the hyphenated name.
There's no question.
Championship though. So,
no question.
I wouldn't call that a consolation prize either. It's something they should be. I'm sure Don Brown and Jim Harbaugh are probably going to crack a bottle of champagne over that one on signing day. So, good.
All right. Great to talk to you, Steve. You have a deal going on, I believe. You're free till the end of the year?
Yeah, no, we're free till January 1st.
January 1st.
Biggest thing I'd say to anybody listening is December should be a really big month for them, barring some upsets. So, you know, I think it's a good time to get in with us. We're usually, like, updating maybe sometimes too often. I'm usually around. But, yeah, we're free until January 1st. And, give it a shot. December's going to be a pretty big month.
All right, thank you, Steve.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Yep,
thanks, Steve.
Steve Lorenz of 24/7's Michigan site. They are free until January 1st. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, talk to Ace Anbender, our walking wounded, about last night's basketball game, and maybe get a little preview of SMU.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team. You and I know. I'll be Michigan again. Michigan.
Underground Printing and most sports shops are proud to present a new retail experience, the Bow Store, exclusively licensed Bo Schembechler brand merchandise.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. Ace, I wish to speak to you now of Andrew. Each day, Andrew Deogracias used to go to his corporate consulting job, where each day he felt the darkness. Now he serves small and mid-sized consulting firms and nonprofits across the country, providing bookkeeping and accounting services. He finds others, usually fellow Wolverines, who left the darkness but need a little help.
Andrew Deogracias is a seasoned Big Four strategy consultant. He should work for the Blackness.
But Ace, he'd rather work for guys like us. He'll keep us from missing deadlines and personally handle onerous tasks like editing and formatting our forms and finalizing documents, research, or analysis. If we did consulting work, you could help us with those deliverables, which you don't usually get from a bookkeeper.
But Brian, we do our work in silence.
No. He's an independent freelancer, so he'll do the work himself. And Andrew's offering a deal to Michigan alumni, one free month. Just mention the promotion code Each Day We Work when contacting him. Find us at deobookkeeping.com and schedule a free consultation today. That's deobookkeeping.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
When the devil is all around, got you crawling on the ground, on your hands and your knees, with an apple in your mouth, you will know.
Welcome back to the MGO Podcast, live at the Bow Store on Main Street. We welcome in Ace Anbender as soon as we can hook the phone up. Sorry about that, Morris. How you doing, Ace?
I'm doing all right.
Are you seeing any pink elephants or whatnot?
They were rebounding the ball really well last night.
It did actually seem like Michigan had pink elephants on the floor last night.
It really did.
So, you know, I think everybody on Twitter noted this, but in the second half, Fran Fraschilla just started marveling about how large Michigan was. And that's a bit of a change of pace.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they made the key change in their lineup last night, and first two games very much justified this, taking DJ Wilson, putting him in the starting lineup, and bringing Duncan Robinson off the bench. And all of a sudden, that gives Michigan a guy who's as big as most of their centers have been in the past, but the difference with Wilson is that he's actually quick enough to defend perimeter players. He can probably guard four positions pretty well, everything except point guard. And so he's been, you know, he had his first career double-double last night. And he's really been the guy, he's definitely the story of the season thus far in terms of his ability to really change the game on both ends. He's blocking a lot of shots. He's rebounding 36% of opponent misses.
Wow.
On the defensive end, and also putting up impressive offensive rebounding numbers. He is, without really scoring that much, I mean, he's been all right in that regard, but not a great scorer. But in every other regard, he has been an absolute game changer. And that also allowed Duncan Robinson, I think, to fall into a role that is much more suited for him. Being able to bring him off the bench mitigates a lot of his defensive issues because John Beilein can match him up against opponent reserve players who aren't as big offensive threats. And then that allows Robinson to hunt some shots when he came in the first half last night. He had a couple quick threes that helped Michigan kind of pull away early. So that was a lineup change that I expected to happen by Big Ten season. I was pleasantly surprised it happened this quickly. And I think that's going to be an absolute season changer for Michigan if this continues. And they'll have a big test of it tonight against SMU, which has, according to KenPom, the eighth biggest team in the country.
Wow.
So they're definitely going to get a test up front. But if they play like they did last night, they should be able to handle that pretty well.
Apologies for the motorcyclists outside on Main Street. Jerkos. So we were talking about this a bit in our Slack chat this afternoon, but if you're looking at some of their early defensive metrics, the Donlin seems to be winning out over the Beilein. Michigan's foul rate and free throw rate allowed is up into the 200s after being in top 20, I think, for the entirety of Beilein's tenure. And they're actually blocking shots for the first time since Ekpe Udoh was around.
Yeah, Wilson is an absolutely huge part of that. He's already got 8 blocks this year through 3 games. And between him and having Wagner and Donnell on the interior, Donnell isn't a great rim protector, neither is Wagner, but they're tall enough where they can affect some shots. And Wilson just completely changes the game with his ability to come off the weak side or rotate down into the post. When one of those guys gets drawn out on the high screen, it no longer leaves Michigan without anybody to protect the rim. As you noted, the foul rate is way, 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 way higher than what we're used to seeing under Beilein, and that is absolutely a Billy Donlin thing. One thing they're doing is they're just not allowing easy baskets anymore. If an opponent has a chance to get a layup underneath, they're hacking them in a way that is not going to allow an and-one opportunity, is not going to allow them to really get a shot off. And you'd think that might end up getting Michigan's big men into some foul trouble, since we were really concerned about that heading into the season. But their foul rates have actually come down, and I think that is almost entirely a product of the way Michigan is now defending the high screen. They stopped at the hard hedges where big men were practically running out to midcourt to cut off guards. Especially Will Wagner last year picked up a ton of cheap fouls, really unnecessary fouls, because of the way Michigan was guarding that high pick and roll. They're not defending it that way anymore. They're doing a lot more trying to deny this guard getting to the screen in the first place with the point guards. Derek Walton and Xavier Simpson have both done a great job on that end. And they're just sinking down inside the arc a little bit more and forcing teams to either shoot over them or having a real tough time trying to drive to the basket. And this new defensive philosophy, I mean, there's a reason a ton of teams started going to the back line. It seems like the superior way to play basketball. Billy Donlin's defense is a tiny bit different than the pack line, but it's pretty much the same philosophy, and that is you're not giving up easy buckets, and that they've really taken it to heart, and it's we'll see against SMU. That'll be a big test tonight, but they are way ahead of where I expected them to be so far.
And they even defied auto bench for a few minutes in the first half last night.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise because Derek Walton picked up a couple fouls early, including one where I'm not sure what he's supposed to do. I know it's the rule, but he basically got a foul for getting elbowed in the face.
Yeah.
But Beilein put him back in with 11 minutes left in the first half when he had 2 fouls, and I was quite relieved that Walton kind of rewarded Beilein's confidence there and didn't pick up a foul the rest of the way. So I think Beilein is slowly getting accustomed to the idea that you don't need to have a hard and fast rule on this, especially against better teams, and especially with guys like Walton, where throughout his whole career he has not been a guy who commits many fouls. So if he just happens to pick up a second foul early, that doesn't mean you have to nail him to the bench. And so far, even though Michigan's foul rates have, as a team, have gone up dramatically, The only rotation player so far who's averaging more than 5 fouls per 40 minutes is Duncan Robinson. So they've been able to kind of spread it out across the entire team in terms of who's committing them, and that hopefully takes some of the decisions out of Beilein's hands in terms of auto-benching, because they've done a pretty good job of not having any one player get into serious foul trouble so far.
Well, one thing that kind of jumped out to me was the fact that, you know, you see Michigan has some guys out there that can make an impact without having to take up shots, without having to, you know, occupy the ball. So we talked about DJ Wilson. You know, you get some of that as well from Moritz Wagner, because, you know, we haven't really seen that since, you know, Glenn Robinson left, since Mitch McGarry left. You know, the ability to create possessions and also, you know, do stuff off the ball that Michigan had when they were very, very good.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised when I went back and checked the box score after the game last night, and Michigan didn't get a single point from the point guard position. Derek Walton and Xavier Simpson both had 0 points. They only took 3 shots, and I thought both of them played pretty darn well. Simpson did have a couple turnovers, but the offense did not drop off when he was running it, and his defense is going to be a huge plus down the road, and it was already looking pretty good last night. He was really good at staying in front of guys. He first forced a turnover on the sideline just by basically guarding two guys at once and harassing a pass that ended up going into the bench. And, you know, with Walton, he's able to, you know, he had 4 assists and only 1 turnover. He was running the offense well. He chipped in a few defensive rebounds. Michigan hasn't needed him to rebound the ball nearly as much as he was doing in the past, which I take as a very good sign. The big men are doing a much better job cleaning up the boards defensively, but they've got a lot of guys where they can kind of slide into certain roles. If Zach Irvin's got the hot hand, he can be the guy with the ball. Derek Walton can fade back. That can switch around, and Irvin can be the guy kind of looking for Walton. They've got a lot of options out there, a lot of guys who can score in a lot of different ways, and that should only... They should only be more diversified by the end of the year. Ibby Watson hasn't hit a 3 yet. That's something that he's going to do down the road. He's 0-for-6 so far, but he's had good-looking opportunities, good-looking shots. They just haven't fallen yet. Simpson is obviously still getting his feet wet, still getting comfortable. And I don't think Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman has really played up to his potential yet. I think he's had a couple rough games recently on both ends, even though his point total was all right last night. It really changes the game, the number of different looks they can throw out there. I got very excited to see that they threw up a couple lineups out there with Zach Irvin at the 2 and Duncan Robinson at the 3, where all of a sudden you've got your second shortest guy on the floor is 6'6", and your shortest guy is Derek Walton, who was rebounding like a center last year. All of a sudden Michigan has become this huge team, and that is a very pleasant change.
And one of the salutary knock-on effects from that is that the pick-and-roll seems to be back in a very big way. Michigan had a ton of just easy dump-offs for layups to both Wagner and Denal last night. You also saw DJ Wilson get in on that action a little bit too. So having guys who can catch and finish around the rim has been a bit of a bugaboo the last few years, and it came back in a big way against Marquette.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of that Marquette was not doing a very good job of defending the pick and roll, especially the roll man. But I mean, we've seen in the past, even when Michigan centers have opportunities to finish at the rim, sometimes they haven't taken advantage. Wagner and Donnell did that very well yesterday, and we also saw, I think, the most pleasant surprise for me was seeing a high screen where DJ Wilson was not involved in it; he was standing in the corner and perfectly timed a baseline cut so that he ended up getting an alley-oop off of a high screen because the attention was being paid to the roll man and there was nobody watching the baseline. And that's something that we saw a lot with Glenn Robinson.
Yep, yep.
And we really haven't seen it since then. And if Wilson can start filling that role and scoring in that fashion, they won't need him to be more than a cursory threat as a three-point shooter. And he's shown that he's capable of knocking down the occasional three. He said, I don't think he'll be a great shooter this year by any stretch, but he can do that. And that'll be just enough where he should be able to get some backdoor cuts and authoritative finishes. So far, that's been pretty fun to watch.
We've only really played one game against real competition, but outlook on the season does seem much improved just given what we've seen from DJ Wilson and the rest of the team early in this year.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot hinged on Wilson's ability to be a contributor this year, and he is looking like he's not just going to be a contributor, but one of the best players on this team and a real matchup problem for a lot of teams. So I definitely, at least for now, the outlook is stronger than it was at the beginning of the year. SMU tonight will be a strong test. They've got an excellent power forward, a Duke transfer, Semi Ojele. I'm going to butcher his name, Semi Ojele. He's been good on both ends, strong inside-outside scorer, 6'7", 235. He's a burly dude, and they're pretty much and they're big across the board. So that's going to be a big test of Michigan's defense and of DJ Wilson specifically. But if he gets through this game looking nearly as good as he has for the last three, it's time to get pretty excited about this team.
Amen. Well, thanks for calling in. Get healthy, Ace. We need you. especially during basketball season. It was good talking to you, and we'll hopefully have you back next week. Terrifying. How's it terrifying?
No, I'm fine here.
Oh, you're terrified because you're talking to people.
Yeah. I'm trying to, like, do as well as Ace would do here, and, I mean, no one can really.
Well, Ace is a very professional podcaster.
Yeah. We also just cut him off, I think, while he was still talking.
That's fine. He's used to that. He's been around Jamie.
All right.
We got to get to one more break.
Before we get to the break, I was in the back there for a second while Ace was talking, and I have a little gift for you. So
a gift?
Yes. Oh, Morris, hit it, please.
Don't do this. I don't know what it is, but don't do it. Good. It's not working.
Nope. Morris can get it.
A very professional podcast. We've got to get to a break. We're going to come back, talk about Indiana.
Did you know the black and white striped referee uniform seen on the field today was created at Moe's? In the early days of football, officials wore white dress shirts, bow ties, and beret-type hats. But when an Arizona quarterback confused Ypsilanti's Lloyd Olds for a player and mistakenly passed him the ball, he asked his friend George J. Moe to make a distinctive shirt to set him apart. The new striped uniform was effective, but hated by fans. Olds was met with plenty of boos from the crowd when he first wore it in 1921, and more when he called targeting. Moe's Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at mosportshops.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
As Jim Harbaugh and the 2016 Michigan Wolverines begin their journey towards a 43rd Big Ten championship and 12th national title, it's important that you're also preparing for this historic season. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law, in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Hey, Ace, have you ever been in a car accident?
I have not.
You have to have been in a car accident for the purposes of this ad.
I apologize for not being in a car accident.
No, say you've been in a car accident.
I've been in a car accident.
Now, what happened to your insurance rates?
They were skyrocketed through the roof.
Thank you. This is a professional podcast.
This is a very professional podcast.
Well, if you are in a car accident and your rates have skyrocketed, the state of Michigan actually allows you to avoid this by taking a defensive driver's class. And Defensive Drivers Group will provide that to you at a low cost. At defensivedriversgroup.com, take their online course, complete it as 99% of their applicants do, and get the states of Michigan, California, and New Jersey to wipe your record clean. There are no hidden fees, and the founders, who are both Michigan grads, will give you $5 off for mentioning this ad. Just say MGO Blog.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to the Ingo Podcast, live at the Bill Store on Main Street. We have one task left to do today, and that is to talk about Indiana.
Indiana.
Thank you.
Indiana.
For that. Of course, the Professor Chaos of the Big Ten. Michigan is favored by 24, but, you know, they're just chaos team, man. So you no idea what to expect.
Well, yep.
But we do have stats and things that we can talk about. This is not the same Indiana team from last year. They are decent to good defensively, as strange as that seems. And their offense has kind of gone off a cliff, especially in the running game.
Yeah, this is real. Their defense actually is much better than their offense. Their running game is – I mean, we were – Ace did the offense, so I can speak more on the defensive side. But we identified several offensive linemen who are very not Indiana – since Greg Frey got there and turned them all into super monsters.
So Dan Feeney, the NFL-level guard they've had for the past 3 years, got injured, and when he came back, he's moved to right tackle, which is obviously not ideal since he's 6'4". This is a little bit like the situation that Maryland has where they're just starting guards across the front. But they had to do that because they really don't have any tackles. Coy Kronk is their left tackle, and he is a minus 20 to PFF. He is a black hole.
And a true freshman.
Yeah. Oh, but really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that would explain that. Their center is also a black hole, and that's really bad when you're going up against Michigan. And then their left guard is really negative as a run blocker. He's a decent pass blocker. So add in a tight end who is also very bad at run blocking. And really, you just have the two guards who are now sitting next to each other. And Indiana's going to try to run behind them. They're going to try to get the edge, as most Michigan opponents do these days. And they're going to really struggle. They're 100th in S&P Plus in rush offense. And if you look at their season to date, that's a completely justified number. So this is not going to be last year when Howard and those guys just ran Michigan over. Indiana has not been able to replace their graduated linemen. They have not been able to replace Howard. So, you know, Devine Redding is a little bit of a scat back. We saw him last year. He's okay, but he's not a difference maker.
Yeah, he's averaging, I think, under 5 yards per carry right now. But most of that actually came really early in the season. So as the offensive line is kind of broken down, especially they lost two right tackles, and that's why Feeney's out there now. He's really not being able to do much. And their other problem, obviously, we'll get to in a second, is the passing game is not up to Indiana standards either.
Yeah, and they had 414 rushing yards against Maryland. Michigan played Maryland. I think everybody has played Maryland, has just blown them out of the water. That's probably the worst rushing defense in a Power 5 school. Sorry, DJ. But every game they've played outside of that, they've really struggled to get to 100 yards, 150 yards at any sort of decent clip. So they're averaging just over 3 yards an attempt in the Big Ten.
And they run a ton of plays, too, so they should be
– yeah.
Counting stats would be their one thing when they actually look good.
Well, those aren't counting stats. That's yards per carry. But so the if you leave out the Maryland game, they're averaging just over 3 yards a carry. And most of these defenses are not Michigan level. So there are some holes in the Michigan defense that I think Indiana will go after. But when they try to run the ball, I think it's going to look a lot like the Maryland game.
Yeah. The most success they've been having lately is this really cool package where they – brought in a guy. I know
the manatee package.
The manatee package, where they have this guy. We just cannot understand how Jim Harbaugh let him go.
Tyler Natee, a 280-pound high school quarterback / fullback / running back, somehow escaped Jim Harbaugh's clutches, and they They're running him out as a wildcat quarterback with their backup quarterback as the running back,
which works sometimes. It was not the worst idea.
Wildly successful against Maryland, but talking about Maryland.
Yeah. I'm not expecting that to work great against Michigan. I'm expecting them to have it in the playbook, so Michigan has to prepare for it. But the reason they're doing that is I'm not sure how to pronounce it still, but Lego. Yeah. They're JC transfer quarterback who was supposed to come in and do just as good of a job as everyone else who's been Indiana quarterback is not. I think Ace described him to me as Wilton Spate at Iowa.
Well, he's got good numbers, and he's putting up a bunch of yards, especially with Westbrook. What's his first name?
Is that Bryant Westbrook?
No. So they have a 6'3" sophomore receiver who kind
Nate Westbrook.
Nate Westbrook, yeah. Who came out of nowhere. They lose Simi Cobbs before the season, and Westbrook steps in and doesn't miss a beat. He's averaging, I think, 11.3 yards in a target, which is really, really good. And he's their deep threat. So when they can hook up and when they can hit Mitchell Page on their screens and stuff like that, they move the ball. The problem with Legau is he's turned the ball over 15 times this year. So he's 13 interceptions. He's fumbled twice, and they've lost both fumbles. And it's just a situation where this is not something an Indiana team that is okay, but not great, can do much about.
Yeah, I mean, he came out, I think they bombed Wake Forest, but he also had a ridiculous number of interceptions in that game.
Yeah, he passed for 500 yards and threw five interceptions.
Right. Right. So after that, they've kind of dialed him back, and one of the things they've taken out of the playbook a lot are those downfield throws, which I really didn't see. We didn't see much of it since Michigan State, I don't think. And that was a big part of their offense that opened up a lot of the run game and everything. Ricky Jones is kind of a poor man's Jeremy Gallen. He's the other receiver. And they would send him downfield all the time. He has that Jeremy Gallen weird ability to be a 5'10 receiver who can out-jump people. He hasn't really been getting those this year. He's been having to do a lot more underneath, and I think that compresses everything in their entire offense.
Yeah, so this is, they're a spread team, and they're going to be able to spread themselves some yards. I don't really see either outside receiver doing much against Michigan's cornerbacks, but, you know, they do throw the ball to their backs a lot, and that's a vulnerability that Michigan's shown. But are they going to be able to move the ball in the red zone should they reach it? Probably not. You know, they're going to bring in the manatee package, and Michigan's probably just going to stuff it. So this is not a team that's probably going to put up a bunch of points against Michigan.
Yeah, I think the X factor with them is that they have Griffin Oakes is their kicker, and he has not been doing well this year. And their punter is actually not very good either. He's the first PFF horrible scorer who actually probably deserves some of that.
Yeah, he's like minus 22 in Pro Football Focus, and I'm used to that. I'm used to that.
But
you look at his stats, and you're like, good God. So he's averaging 40 yards a punt, and half of his punts get returned.
Yeah, which against Peppers could be a thing. But I think that, you know, Kevin Wilson's a pretty smart coach, especially with in-game theory, and doesn't have much to worry about if he goes for it on fourth down and doesn't make it. So I'm guessing there's going to be a pretty long fourth down leash for that offense.
I mean, the thing is, but they can't run the ball. So last year, I mean, one of the major factors that turned that game into a game was the fact that Wilson managed to stick Michigan's defense on the field for really long drives by going for it on fourth and short. If he does that against this defense with his offensive line, he's probably just going to turn the ball over.
Right, it's Ryan Glasgow now. Well, I think either way they're going to go for it just because, this is how they stay in this game. They start going into special teams game in this against Michigan, even in the rain and the cold or whatever. I think they're just going to get blown out or blown over.
Moving to the other side of the ball,
yes.
You had an interesting take on what their approach was, especially as a run defense.
Yeah, they're a 4-2-5 team that plays 3-4 philosophy, where the defensive linemen just kind of shoot right up into the offensive lineman across from them. They'll always bring at least four guys. They're always at least knocking four guys back and preventing releases, and that's really the key. They have two really good linebackers, especially the weak side linebacker. Again, don't know how to pronounce it. Tigray Scales.
Man, you're worse at this than I am.
Well, that's what we have, Ace.
That says something.
I have other skills. Anyway, T-Gray scales is amazing as long as you keep them unblocked. So that's basically the design of defense, is to only have one offensive lineman going downfield. One of those linebackers is going to be unblocked. Usually it's Scales, and he's going to read and attack.
So they have like a fleet of defensive linemen who are decent, which is an accomplishment for Indiana. They have 8 guys who play, and none of them are terrible.
Yeah,
none of them are great. There's one guy, their nose tackle, who's
Green.
Named,
Green.
Yes.
Yeah. They on Indiana, they've got like 6 guys named Green. So you just default to that if you don't know someone's name.
They've managed to kind of like keep their linebackers clean, and their linebackers make all the plays. And if you look at their schedule, they haven't really played a man ball team except Michigan State,
which is 8 weeks ago.
8 weeks ago, and Michigan State actually ran for almost 5 yards a carry against them. And if you've watched Michigan State this year, you know that they do not have a good offensive line, and they do not have a good rush offense. So what does that tell you? Tells you that one of the flaws that this approach has is when you stack the box of fullbacks and tight ends and you can get a helmet on their 2 inside linebackers, then they can't hold up, and then you can go get some yards.
Yeah, this is a very Don Brown philosophy. They solve their problems with aggression. So they're going to be blitzing. They have a hybrid space player who's also a true freshman. That guy blitzes all the time. They have a blitz they call America, which I had to try it once I learned that that was the name of the blitz. But it's basically just a Sam blitz. And they were running that against Michigan State all the time. And Michigan State finally just destroyed them by doing some outside option stuff, or just running a tight end on a quick out route. So I think that's the way you beat them. They're going to play quarters on the outside, and they're going to. That means you push that receiver upfield. There's going to be some space, and they can just Michigan can kind of throw it to butt and trap their balls off a little bit, and that should be the game.
Well, the secondary has a couple of good corners, or good-ish corners, decent corners. Rashard Fant is actually a pretty decent guy now. He's the guy who had all the pass breakups last year. He's improved and is a legitimately decent player. The problem is that their safeties are a problem, and Oliver, their other inside linebacker, is a problem, and they are playing a true freshman at that Sam/spacebacker spot. So.
And at the other cornerback spot, too. Riggins is a freshman.
Yeah, well, so what happens is, you know, they are a decent pass defense. They're about 60th nationally, but they give up a ton of big plays. So they're, I think, 13th at 20-yard pass plays allowed in the Big Ten, and 14th tied with Purdue for 30-plus-yard plays allowed. So Michigan will have opportunities to either catch and run the ball or hit some deep shots, and you know, we saw Michigan miss all their deep shots last game, and that does happen. But you do expect about half of those to be complete if they're open, and Michigan will have their opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, this is a defense that they kind of put it together. I mean, I really like their the defensive coordinator, Tom Allen. And I've been comparing him to Don Brown all time. So, like Don Brown, though, he at BC, he's kind of just using what he's got. And this defense was designed to use all the strengths that his players have. But if you take care of that, if you get a block on Scales, or if the play lasts for a while, these are the same guys they had last year, or people who displaced guys they had last year. And after a play goes for a while, someone's going to be open. So they look good because they're being used at what they're good at. And once they get out of that, they tend to break down.
And then the other thing that might be a major factor is the weather. It's supposed to be nasty, sleety. I think that's actually to Michigan's advantage, because I don't see this rush offense really doing much of anything. So, but that could ramp up the chaos factor and chaos team.
Or it could just be an Illinois a couple of years ago game where they just run them over because they can't tackle them right then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to ever discount an Indiana team coached by Kevin Wilson, but this doesn't look like the kind of offense that's going to keep Indiana in this game. So it's a 24-point spread, even with the probable start of John O'Korn, and that feels about right to me.
Yeah, let's get past last week.
All right. We We would like to thank our sponsors, the Bow Store, Underground Printing, and Moe's, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, DEO Bookkeeping, DEO Bookkeeping, I'm told, Michigan Law Grad, Defensive Drivers Group, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Peak Wealth Management, and Tailgater Concierge.
Who's got it better than us?